Top of the 6 o'clock hour. Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris L.O. And Matt, I got to tell you, man, I'm very happy that we haven't heard my slip-up prior to coming on air in a little bit.
We haven't
heard me stumbling over my words. We continue to hear Chris, though.
Yeah, she plays that one about 14 times a day.
What can I say? It's on heavy rotation.
I gotta get into a cautionary tale to all you husbands out there.
Oh, my goodness.
And mother-in-laws.
Yeah.
So if you guys haven't heard about this story, Lucas Glover, who was a former U.S. Open champion, his wife is facing a domestic violence charge.
That's not funny.
That's not funny at all.
No.
So apparently, as Mr. Glover told the authorities, his wife likes to pick fights with him when he doesn't play well. He didn't make the cut, I believe, after the third round. So
why
he made
do you
the
suppose
cut.
She's picking fights with him when he doesn't play well? Because she's not getting as big of a paycheck to go out and spend on her.
Who knows? That could certainly be. It's certainly a valid.
I'll tell you one thing. If my wife picked on me every time I didn't do a great radio show, I'd be in big trouble.
I mean, we'd be picked on all the time.
Yeah, there's nights you just can't bring it. You
we
try.
Both, yeah, we
you
both
don't
would
bring
be picked
it. You
on.
Give it your best shot. But
nevertheless.
I'm sure Lucas Glover's trying.
Yeah, there's no doubt. He got to the third round. Of course he was trying.
Yeah.
I mean, if he wasn't trying, he'd have got out there at the cut, second round. But
sure.
Nevertheless.
She was mad.
And when Lucas Glover's mother tried to, you know, intervene, she got bum-rushed. She got bum-rushed by the wife. When authorities got there, they saw the blood on
what's bum rushed?
Sorry,
I have to
bum rushed.
I have to ask for all of us old people. She just attacked.
She attacked.
Just
attacked
ran at her. The guy's mom.
She attacked the guy's mom.
Oh my goodness!
And it didn't go well for her. She was then handcuffed, put into the car. She then proceeded to damaged the property of the police car.
The police vehicle took a beating,
yes,
too?
Yes, the police vehicle also got some on the way being put in the car, and she spent the night in jail.
Lucas Glover said everyone is fine. I mean, you know, he gets quoted here. Like this, I mean, seriously, this is not a good situation to be in the middle of. Your wife just attacked your mother, is what happened. Bloodied your mother. And, of course, they're coming to you because you're the athlete or the
same
celebrity
one.
In a situation. And so he had to come up with a comment. And Glover said, everyone is fine. Regrettably, although Krista, that's his wife, was charged, we are comfortable that the judicial system is able to address what actually happened. And Krista will be cleared in this private matter.
A.K.A. My mother is not going to file charges against my wife. Therefore, this case will be dropped.
Leave it alone.
Yes.
She had to post $2,500 in bonds to be released from jail the following day.
I think they got it.
Krista Glover. My goodness.
She deserves none of that money if she's going to act like that. He shouldn't have bailed her out. Come on.
With all due respect, Krista Glover needs a better PR agent because this picture of her that accompanies right? the story, she looks a bit psycho there.
I mean, listen.
Sorry, but
a bit.
When you go to jail, you don't get the opportunity
you
to
don't get
your,
the good
get
picture.
The glamour shot.
You don't get the glamour shot.
It doesn't work that
no,
way.
No, and when you go to jail for stuff like that, you're usually doing something before, like drinking, that makes you look a little tired.
You think that might have had something to do with her reaction?
I would hope
that's
so.
That's my guess. That's my hope, actually, is that she was a little liquored up.
A little bit too intoxicated. At least she wasn't driving.
Cautionary tale, fellas.
But what's the cautionary tale? Don't marry somebody who's psycho?
Don't cross your wife.
I think it's play better.
Don't play better.
Play better and don't cross your wife.
Learn how to play. If you're going to be on the tour, learn how to golf. Otherwise, you could be in for some difficulty.
There's a lot of guys on the tour. I mean, they won't say this about their wives, but wives follow their husbands on tour and give them the looks and kind of do those things, cheer them on or tell them they need to play better, stuff like that. So this isn't Lucas Glover
By the way, that's in every sport.
Oh, come on.
That's
this has got to be Lucas Glover only.
No.
How many wives are beating up the guy's
I about to say,
parents?
Maybe that part is
definitely. Well,
yeah,
that's
definitely,
not happening anywhere else.
But wives across the country who have athletes as husbands – they give their husbands the business. I can assure you of that.
I like watching what is that called? Hard Knocks, when they have the wives in the stands and they kind of are following their husbands, and the wives are always so critical about their husband's play.
Anytime
well,
I see
look, in Hard Knocks, they're usually following the wives of the players that
the
are
bubble.
Trying to make the team.
Right.
So that there's a lot at stake there.
I tell you what, that's
a lot at
I
stake.
Could tell you that's a tough environment.
Being, that would be tough.
Wives being amongst wives can be a tough environment from time to time.
I would think so. I mean, when you're battling for jobs.
Yeah, there's so many dynamics that play into it. You know, you could be come up together and all of a sudden one guy is getting more playing time than the other. Believe it or not, that kind of can affect relationships, especially if they're competing for the same position.
I would think so. I would think that there are not a lot of backup quarterback wives who are like best friends with the starter's wife.
Right.
That's just not going to
kind of a conflict of interest, right?
It's probably not going to work out, yeah. But Lucas Glover, see, to me, Lucas Glover's kind of the victim of this whole thing. Now, he didn't get hit by his wife, but his mom did. But Lucas Glover's the name that we know.
Right.
So
his name takes a hit on this.
His name takes a hit on this.
Yeah.
For no real fault of his own.
Other than not playing well.
Other than that he didn't play well.
Or marrying a crazy lady.
Which forced his wife to drink and beat the snot out of his mom. Okay. But whereas Lucas Glover really wasn't as at fault, Carson Smith is at fault. And this is an embarrassing situation as well. I'm going to just toss this in because we got a couple seconds left. And then Bob Baffert's going to join us, and we're going to talk about the Preakness Kentucky Derby winner, Justify. Carson Smith is a Red Sox, Boston Red Sox reliever. I mean, I've never heard, just obviously a late-inning, middle-inning guy, whatever. Carson Smith has been placed on the 10-day disabled list because he suffered a subluxation.
I don't know what he did.
He wrecked his right shoulder, basically, when he was gave up a home run and then went into the dugout and threw his glove into the dugout and evidently threw it so awkwardly that he pulled his shoulder out of its socket. And now he's going to go on the 10-day disabled list. And this is potentially a longer injury than that.
Yeah, subluxation
you gotta be careful.
Is basically when your shoulder comes out of place and goes back into place. So he had, just so you're clear, this is a pitcher throwing something, A. B, he had to throw this glove extremely hard in order to pull his shoulder out of place. This guy throws a baseball for a living. I just want to remind you of that.
And you can confirm this, Tony, but they have punching bags in
some clubs
the runway
yes.
of most dugouts in case guys are a little frustrated. For them to hit.
I know they have one in Milwaukee. They have one a few other places. You can go down there and take your bat to the to the punching bag and go to work on
right.
it. Sometimes, as you can tell from this situation, you don't always make it to that punching bag.
All right. We are going to hold off on our break because joining us right now is he's the best in his sport, and I just think we're very lucky to have him spend a few minutes with us. We see him at Del Mar every summer, and he's got the Kentucky Derby winning horse, Justify, and he's going for the Preakness, and it's Bob Baffert joining us here on the Gwynn and Chris Show. Bob, thanks so much for taking some time. I know you're very busy this week. It's very kind of you to join us. How are you?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's been a little busy, but we, got to take care of our California boys.
That's so awesome. Nice of you to do that. Tell us about Justify and how he came out of the Kentucky Derby and had a little bit of a heel problem from what I read, but you say that that's behind him and he's 100% ready to go for the Preakness?
Yeah, I mean, anytime these horses, you know, that's what we hate to see them run on a wet track because they, especially that day, it was a lot of rain. It rained 3.5 inches, and it was packed down. And it sometimes that just it's abrasive, you know, hitting. It's like hitting the ground. And he was going fast. And so what he did is his hind foot. He bruised it, a heel on it. But we treat it like the usual hot water, Epsom salts, and just treat it. It takes it a couple days and it goes away, but he's doing fine and we're really looking forward to it. I'm in Kentucky right now with him, but he ships tomorrow. He'll fly in there tomorrow, get in there tomorrow afternoon, and all I've been doing is watching the Weather Channel. It looks like it's going to be raining every day there.
Oh, man.
Hmm. Well, that could be to his benefit since he ran so well in the rain in Kentucky.
Well, yeah, I mean, but I like driving. I like beautiful days. You know, I don't have to put another poncho on.
We're speaking with Bob Baffert, legendary horse trainer. Bob, you trained American Pharoah, which won the Triple Crown in 2015. Where do you think Justify compares to American Pharoah?
Well, I think they're both really superior horses because Justify is doing something that no horse had ever done before. A horse had never not run as a two-year-old and won the Kentucky Derby. And he's run, this is going to be his, I mean, he won four races, including the Kentucky Derby, in 75-day period span. So it takes a really, really superior horse to do that. And he beat some really good horses. I mean, it's like, Sandy the Derby, he was in there. Bolt the Aura was, we know how good he is. You know, he could have easily been the champion. So it's just, and the field for this year's Kentucky Derby was just, it was just really strong. Probably one of the strongest fields I've ever been in. So, and to do all the heavy lifting, going so fast early and keep going, you know, it just really shows you how tough he is. And he's still, you know, he's a young horse and he's, basically, I've run him into shape because I never had a chance. We just ran him, came back, ran him, just keep running him. And so, but he's held up to it. So, he still has to do the second leg and, you know, he still have to have racing luck. But right now, I feel pretty good about it.
Bob Baffert trains Justify. He won the Kentucky Derby going after the second leg of the Triple Crown this Saturday in Baltimore at Pimlico. Trying to get the Preakness, and Bob Baffert, you're the only guy that anybody knows that's ever won a Triple Crown, so the only guy who knows how it feels. But, Bob, talk a little bit to us who don't follow horse racing quite as much. What's so strange about the fact that this horse didn't run at all as a two-year-old, and why did it not run as a two-year-old and only begin its racing career at three?
It's because he's a big horse, and they took his time with him. And you know, a lot of horses have just run, like, usually they'll run in October or November or whatever. But there was, it's called the Apollo curse. There hadn't been a horse win that didn't run his two since Apollo back in 18, I don't know.
Yeah, it was 126 years or something, yeah.
Whatever it was. But, you know, but it's almost, you know, I almost won it with Bodie Meister, who was in the same boat. He was leading all the way and we're a fast pace. He just got beat at the end. But, you know it's going to be, eventually it was going to be broken. But this horse was, you know, if you would have asked me January 1st, what do you think about Justify? I would have said, woo.
Yeah.
You know, he goes like, you know, he's just getting ready, you know, but he came around really fast and, you know, we knew he was a nice horse, but we never thought he was this kind of horse. So, you know, they just show you in the afternoon that, you know, until you run them, you don't know until you run them.
Bob, along those lines, when do you know you have something special on a horse?
You know, when we start breezing them, like, you know, working them faster, like in a fast pace in the mornings. And when I start working them, like, 5/8 of a mile, you know, that's when I start seeing, they start separating themselves. And the really good ones, they don't, the first time you breeze them that far, a lot of times they'll get a little tired and they just slow down at the end. This guy did not slow down. He was just getting stronger. And like American Pharoah, he was the same way. American Pharoah was, like, just a beast of a horse. And he just got better and he was just so good. And this horse is that way too. He is a remarkable horseman, just like that older horse I had last year that, and then he got beat, you know, he tailed off his air gate. Here's another horse that was just, you know, off the charts. So they're just horses that are just like, you know, you got guys like Usain Bolt, you know, like that. You just, this LeBron James, you know, you see it's just this, you know, there's a lot of great athletes out there, but then there's those that are just, you know, they're just like Kevin Durant, you know, they're just a, something else, you know. So they're franchise players.
Well, they're franchise players, and that's a lot of it is because you make them that, Bob. One last question for me. I really appreciate the time. Like I said, I know you, how busy you are this week, and I just sent you a text on a lark, and it's very nice of you to get back to me. Tony and I like to talk a lot about athletes, and I know you do, but athletes that come through when there's the most on the line. And I think you have one of those working for you in Mike Smith, your jockey. And I don't think people realize who don't follow horse racing as closely. This man's over 50 years old. He's still in unbelievable shape to run and control these animals. And he's won another Kentucky Derby. And he's usually the first guy you call when you've got a horse like this.
Well, I mean, he's like your Mike has always been a great rider. When he was young, he was, you know, he was in New York and a leading rider. And he, in those years, that's when they had like the top riders, and he was leading rider then. So he's always been great. But then when you get older, you know, he's 52, and I would never thought I was going to use a 52-year-old jockey on my Kentucky Derby horse, because I remember Willie Shoemaker in his last years, he was the oldest jockey. He was 54 when he won the Derby for Charlie Whittingham. And then it was like, it was crazy, you know, like a guy that old, you know. But, you know, Mike is like, he's like the closer, you know. He's like that ace, you know, where, okay, we need to close it. And there's a lot of extra pressure on all of us when you have the favorite. And, you know, he rode horses like Zenyatta, you know, always heavy pressure, always a favorite. And, you know, great riders get great horses from getting in trouble and getting beat. You know, they do their best. You know, things don't always go right, but the majority of times they know, you know, it's up to me. I've got to do something special. So, you know, he rises to the occasion. He keeps doing it, and he loves it, and he just gets better with age. I mean, he's just really competitive, but in a good way. You know, he's not, you know, some guys are, they get overly competitive, but he's not that way. He's a nice guy. He's a, you know, straight, but when he gets on that horse, he's not a nice guy anymore. he's gonna, you know, and so, cause especially in the Derby, like I was that Aidan O'Brien, who's like, he's like the Nick Saban of Europe. I mean, he wins everything for Coolmore. And I was telling him, I said, look at these jockeys, especially in the Kentucky Derby with 20 horses, these guys are savages. If you break a little slow, you can just forget it. The mud, you might as well go to your car, because they're going to just, it's going to be a rough trip. And his horse didn't break, and they just, at Mendelsohn, he was a really good horse. And
yep.
And they interviewed him afterwards. He just, you can't believe the savagery, the you used the word savage, like, he couldn't believe it himself. Like, man, these guys are like, it's tough. You know, it's, you know, dirt racing is, it's fast, you know, it's just they go. It's not like turf racing, they break and they just go along, and then they just sprint home the last quarter of a mile. But the Kentucky Derby, that's the race, man. That's what we always work so hard for. I mean, you can't, you know, and to be able to win it over and over like that, it's just, I can't believe. When I was training quarter horse, I never thought of this. And when I got into the Thoroughbred arena, I never really, I was just hoping to win like a Breeders' Cup sprint or something, you know. But but I just, you know, I just keep going, and hopefully we'll get another one next year and just enjoy this ride like we did American Pharoah.
Well, I hope it continues, and I know all the racing fans out there want to see Justified do it. And we can't wait to see you in Del Mar in a couple months, too, when you bring your group of horses out here. Bob, thanks so much for the time. It was a thrill to have you on.
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks for having me.
There he is, Bob Baffert. It's rare that you get the number one guy in the sport on your radio show, and we lucked out on that. Bob Baffert, even if you're not a horse racing fan, you can appreciate brilliance, and he is that.
I certainly learned a few things, not knowing anything really about horse racing. But
yes, the good questions, man. I was impressed. Yeah, nice job.
You can hear his enthusiasm, his passion for what he does.
He's just a competitor, man.
Just in the way he was explaining a lot of that stuff. So that was really cool. We're going to go to break here. When we come back, we got Gary St. Jean, Warriors analyst, NBC Sports Bay Area, to come join us on this show. I'm Tony Gwynn Jr.
I am Chris Ella. The Cavs lead by 10.
This is the Gwynn and Chris Show.
On San Diego's only FM sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Breaking news. This is huge news. Chris Ello, Tony Gwynn Jr., Gwynn and Chris. Who just left the court in Boston, Tony? My goodness, not looking too good either.
Mr. LeBron James.
Wow.
Took a shoulder on his attack to the basket, took a shoulder right on the jaw. And listen, I recognize that kind of walk from a mile away.
Yeah.
That is a concussion walk. Where your bell has been rung. Now, I'm not going to say he's going to not return in this game, but he was walking off very gingerly, kind of like trying to get his bearings underneath him to see where he's at.
Well, he shot two free throws after he bumped into the shoulder of Jason Tatum going to the rim, as you said. It was not an illegal shot. It wasn't anything beyond a regular common foul. But he took two free throws. He made the first one. The second one, he almost looked like he was about to kind of fall over.
Yeah.
I mean, he threw it up there. It rolled off the rim. He kind of just stood there for a second. And they stopped the game and walked him back to the locker room. So that is a scary moment to see LeBron James going back like that. I know everyone cares about the game, and Cleveland's up by 9 right now, second quarter. But LeBron James, you don't want to see him go off the floor.
And initially, we didn't see the shoulder to the face. We just saw LeBron walking off, walking into the tunnel.
Yeah.
And you could tell that he wasn't all there as he was walking off. He was walking on very slow, as I said. He's still in the tunnel trying to figure out. It seemed like the staff is trying to figure out where they go from there.
Now, what's the concussion protocol in the NBA? Do they have a similar thing to baseball, to football and hockey and the rest of the stuff? I don't even know what their protocol is.
It's got to be like the same. They have one. I feel like they definitely, because I know Brandon Ingram missed a couple games due to a concussion. I don't know if there's a protocol saying you have to miss a certain amount of time once you have one going into a concussion protocol, but you know that all of sports is taking that very seriously nowadays. So
yes, they are.
I found it.
What you got, Matt?
All right, so a player in the concussion protocol can't return to the floor until the following. He is without concussion-related symptoms. At rest, he has been evaluated by a physician. He has successfully completed the NBA return to participation protocol, and a team physician has discussed this with the director of NBA concussion program. So they have a whole concussion program that no one knew about, apparently.
And so, I imagine at the Eastern Conference Final, they have even more people around there.
This could get interesting because just based on what we saw, I mean, it's very easy to think that LeBron could have a concussion, right?
The way he walked off, I would be surprised if somebody let him come back in the game based on what I have seen with concussion people. But then again, I've seen a couple of NFL games where quarterbacks have been broken in half, gone to the sideline, and one play later they jog back on the field, and then the next week somebody says, hey, they didn't go through the right protocol with that guy.
Yeah, I mean, and it becomes a big story. And
yeah.
Now, so I was leading to the same exact thing. I wonder, I mean, this is the playoffs.
This is LeBron James.
This is the Eastern Conference Finals, and LeBron and the Cavs are down 1-0. I don't know how you keep him off the court, even if he has a concussion. I'm being honest. Like, I don't know how they're going to, like, who's going to be the doctor that's like, nah, man, you can't go back into the game, LeBron.
Well, I know who the doctor is going to be, the Celtic team doctor.
Right.
He'll come right over.
Right.
Excuse me, you guys need any help in there? Let me check him out.
Is Adam Silver, like, holding a special meeting right now to discuss what's going to happen?
They may have an extra long halftime or something
It could last a little longer than it normally does, for sure.
Yeah, you know, but you know what? All joking aside, A, you're concerned because the guy's got a concussion. B, to me, even if I was rooting for the Celtics here, if I'm the Celtics, I
want
to go to the finals to beat LeBron. Yeah. I don't want to go to the finals because LeBron got a concussion and missed the rest of the series.
There's no doubt.
You want to beat the best.
There's no doubt.
And I know that the Celtic players would even say that. So hopefully he's okay. Hopefully he'll get back in this game tonight. But the way he walked off, I would not guarantee that.
No.
Because he was definitely foggy.
I mean, you just don't – you're just not used to seeing LeBron James really take a shot like that. I mean, he's bigger, badder than everybody on the floor, and to see him walk off like that – it gives you, like you said, it'd be very surprising if he doesn't have a concussion of some sort.
We will find out. We'll keep you up to date on the story, certainly. On the other side, the Warriors took game one last night over the Houston Rockets. Joining us, a former NBA coach now with the Warriors Television Network, Gary St. Jean, right here on 97.3 The Fan with Gwynn and Chris. Gary, how are you feeling tonight? I hope you're okay.
Well, I grew up in Massachusetts,
uh-oh.
So I'm very locked into this game, but I'm feeling awfully good about the Warrior game last night.
Sure.
As you should. Gary, do they have an answer? Do the Rockets have an answer for Kevin Durant? Because it certainly seemed like no matter what they tried yesterday, none of it was working.
I tell you, fellas, there's not many in the whole league that do. Yeah. He's certainly special. I think he's... as unique as Harden is, I think the way that he can play within the flow of a game and find space, that's the key with NBA players, to have space. And he creates that off the dribble at 7 feet better than anybody that you've seen at that size. And he's just a great scorer. Then it's the answer to your question, no.
They don't have an answer.
At Ariza, five fouls early.
Yeah.
Bob Mute comes in. They didn't have an answer for him. They tried even Chris Paul on him, kind of like Holiday tried to guard him with the Pelicans, and that's not going to work.
Not much has worked against the Warriors for the last 3 or 4 years. Gary St. Jean is with us from the Warriors Television Network. Gary, the Warriors seemed to me, maybe it was just a kind of a subtle strategy last night, but they let Harden get – didn't let him, but, I mean, Harden got his points – and he got some assists, but he wasn't able to assist on any three-point shots last night, which I thought was a very interesting statistic and a very interesting note. Did Golden State do that on purpose?
Well, I don't know if it was on purpose. And we're going in and out of each other with the connection. But at this point, Harden is such a... you know, it's such a contrast in style of play.
Yeah.
The fast break points were 18-3. And they had 25, they isolated 40 times. Regular season, they isolated about 23. And they had three, four 24-second violations. And I think we're going to see a change tomorrow in that they're going to get into their offense quick. And they're going to move. When they get the matchup they want, then they're going to attack. And you could see they're trying to go at Steph Curry as much as they can. What the heck, the other four guys you could argue could be on the other team.
It sounds like
they're not letting the cat out. They need some production out of the full five. They came up short. And Ariza and they're all.
Well, we're having a little trouble, obviously, as you can hear, with the connection with Gary St. Jean. He's very nice of him to come on. Let's see if we can't get that hooked back up. We'll take a little break. Did LeBron actually come out of the locker room?
He came
already?
Out. He's back on the floor now.
He's playing?
He is playing.
How could he possibly have gone any through any kind of concussion protocol?
That maybe they came to the conclusion that he never had a concussion. Like I said, what Cleveland doctor in their right mind was going to put him in the concussion protocol down 1-0 in the Eastern Conference
Only
final?
A doctor who has a concussion, I think, would have been the only
right.
one. You're probably right.
So
all right.
LeBron's back on the floor, 52-44, actually 55-48. Cavs are up, and they're in – 45 seconds left to go in the first half. We're going to take a break, and hopefully we can get Gary back on the line.
Yeah, interesting stuff from him.
When we return. I'm Tony Gwynn Jr.
Chris Ello.
This is the Gwynn and Chris Show.
On San Diego's only and best FM sports talk station, 97.3 The Fan. Back on the program here, Gwynn and Chris, halftime in Boston. LeBron James and the Cavs lead by 7. LeBron's got 25 points. He also might have a concussion. But evidently, it's not much of a concussion because they put him right back on the floor about 2 minutes later. And he finished up the half, so hopefully he's all right. Gary St. Jean from the Warriors TV network was nice enough to join us, and then we lost the connection with him, and hopefully we got him back now. Gary, are you there?
You guys sound 200% better.
Awesome. Wow. I appreciate that. We're always working on our voice, trying to get better. So, I don't, where did we left off with the Rockets trying to.
We're talking about Durant. Which
trying to stop Durant.
You know, guys, he's just playing at an optimum level. He loves the way the Warriors are playing with a lot of ball movement. The secret sauce is 300 passes a game. And if they get in that vicinity, they're very, very tough to beat. He's playing with a couple other great scorers, and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green just does it all, and Andre Iguodala now starting, 2 years ago MVP of the playoffs. You know, they've got a great five there that are really high IQ players and really special, and I think Kevin's really enjoying the experience.
You know, watching this ball club, Gary, it is – really a lot of fun, and I'm not a big Warriors fan, but I enjoy watching them run their offense because it just seems like there's constant movement and there's a counter to the counter to the counter. And how have these guys, and I'm sure it has to do with the fact that they've been together for a while now, but they seem to execute their offense better than anybody in the league. You mentioned those 300 passes. It seems like a guy, especially like Kevin Durant, coming from Oklahoma City to Golden State, seems like everybody enjoys playing the game because of that offense.
Well, you can look at OKC and you can look at Houston, and they've been both very successful. So there's different styles of play that you can incorporate. I would say the majority of the players would enjoy playing the way the Warriors play because you get a lot of touches, and you space and pace, meaning you're spacing the floor very well, and you set a good tone or pace to your game. And they really have what I call probably 6 or 7 above-average passers,
yeah.
And then they've got 3 amazing shooters and scorers. And so you tie that all together with just a lot of guys who accept their roles really well. A key guy, for example, the other night was Kevon Looney. You guys saw him a few years ago at UCLA. He came into the NBA, had to have 2 hip surgeries, and he was just never really improving his game. And this summer he lost 20 pounds and really moving well, and they're not afraid to switch and let him guard Chris Paul. So they've got a lot of weapons. We're not going to see a lot of size, for example. We probably won't see Pachulia. We'll see a little bit of David West, and probably not going to see McGee. And I don't even know if we'll see Bell. It's going to be a small ball kind of series, and that's just the way it's set on the table.
Gary, as a former coach, what do you think about when you watch Steve Kerr coach?
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is who he is as a person. He's really a great guy. I knew him when he came in as a rookie. I think I was coaching up in Sacramento. No, I was an assistant with Nelly when we had Mullen and Hardaway in Richmond. And he came from Arizona playing for Lute Olson. And you're saying, I'm going to post him up. And he would fight guys like Mitch Richmond. He'd bang him and get all red-faced. And then I got to know him, and what a great guy. And that's the key. He's a great communicator. His players really know that he has their best interests at heart. This year, they sat guys out if there was any issues health-wise. They weren't concerned about getting the home court because this is the 4th conference finals in a row. And then you look at him in terms of X's and O's, and he embraces his staff. He doesn't have them stand on the sidelines like statues during practice. He's got Ron Adams, who's probably been voted two or three years in a row as the best assistant coach in the league. He's my age. He just has a great feel for defense. He's a great, great guy. And, you know, they've got Brown and they've got Collins. He's got an excellent staff. And that's what I love about him. And then another thing, he really has. So his offense is beautiful. The defense is the best in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And so when you look at it, and I love watching, like, after timeout action. You know, what are you going to run on a side out of bounds, baseline out of bounds, whatever it is? And he's as good as they come. I think we're very fortunate here in the Bay Area. I think Greg Popovich is the best in the business. And he played for him for a good number of years, couple championships, and Steve Kerr's right there behind him.
We're speaking with Gary St. Jean, Warriors analyst, NBC Sports Bay Area. And you brought up such a good point with the defensive part, and it leads me to think of Draymond Green. I mean, he doesn't – his numbers don't pop out all the time, but – you certainly, when you watch him, you get to understand that he seems to be the heart and soul of that team. He pushes everybody in the direction that they need to go. Is that accurate as far as him leading the way, especially defensively?
Guys, he's almost – last night was subpar for him scoring. He's almost averaged a triple-double in the playoffs. And he's had some rebounding games, 15, 16, 17. Not many teams can run a point power forward where you initiate offense with your power forward. He's so versatile, and he has a great feel and vision for the game, so it allows him to get a defensive rebound, no outlet pass, blow it up the court, and find Thompson or Curry out on the wings. And then you talk about him on defense. Guys, I'll tell you what, we all marvel at just his left. He's two or three counts ahead of the play. He can, for example, there's a pick and roll. One time he might switch. The next time he might double team it and just blow the whole play up. And then when he's off the ball, when he's underneath the basket, say weak side, if there's penetration, he's there early. Shot blocking at his size, 6'6". And the heart that he plays with, it's just huge. And you don't like him if he's on the other team or if he comes in another arena, but I'm going to share with you, Warrior fans, we all love him.
Is Draymond only 6'6"?
On a good day.
that explains a lot then, because he doesn't play 6'6". He plays like 6'9", it seems like.
Yeah, he plays like he's 6'9", and Kevin Durant wants to say 6'10" or 11", and I would wager that he's 7 feet or a day.
Right. Here's something that we've talked about a little bit, Gary, and I mean, you've been in the league and around it as a coach and an analyst and all these things for a lot of years, so I think you could speak to it well. Tony and I have tried to figure out where would this Warrior, and whether they win the championship or not, I think this year is irrelevant. They've already won two, and they very well may win three. We know how good they are. But athletically, the way these athletes are now, how good would the Warriors be against, like, the Bulls of Jordan or the Lakers of Kobe and Shaq, or even before that, the Celtics and the Lakers? Or maybe a better question is, would those teams have a chance against the Warriors?
Well, guys, first you're going to have to tell me what rules we're playing with. And are we going to have, you know, Earl Strom and Jake O'Donnell and Jack Madden and all those guys from 20, 30 years ago, and it was a different game.
I'm so glad you said
that. All the way back, I'll take you back before the Pistons, who had the Jordan rules, and you know it was knock them on the floor. I came in the league in '79, and so that's a little bit after that is when Bird and Magic came in. You know, those were two great, great teams, and Magic's team under Pat Riley, they were fabulous. We used to play. After I was in Milwaukee for 7 years with Nelly and a couple years with the Nets, I came out west. And we used to play exhibition games down there every year in San Diego, every single year. Yeah. And you'd watch Magic, and I think his team could play in any era. They were amazing. Now, Bird's team, they weren't the quickest, but they were maybe the smartest, and he was just he was uncanny. He was unbelievable. Then you fast forward, say, to the Bulls. The Bulls could play, and they could go small because with Pippen and Jordan, and they had Harper, and they had Kukoc, they could play. Their problem is they didn't have any marquee centers. They were just role guys. Then you get to the Pistons. then you really got to talk about what the rules are.
Right.
because that was a whole different game. That was wild. And, you look at these Spurs teams with four championships. Beautiful basketball. And, that takes you up to now. And this Warrior team, our game is opened up so much, guys.
Yeah.
We don't see any post play. It's all early transition offense, a lot of pick and roll. That's why the big immobile centers are going out to pasture. You've got to be able to have bigs that can come up and help defend the pick and roll action, which now is primarily in the middle of the floor. So we've had tremendous change. I would share with you guys, I think the NBA right now is as popular as it's ever been all over the world. It's just a great game we have right now, and it's led by this team up here in the Bay Area.
That's such an interesting take on it. Because
you should have seen Tony's reaction when you said, what rules are we playing with? Because every time I ask him this question, he goes, what rules are we playing with?
I just think that is such a huge that's a huge factor in if you're going to compare
it.
Two teams from different eras, especially those eras. I mean, hand-checking, and Gary, you mentioned it. I mean, you could clothesline a guy, and it was just a two-shot foul. So it was just
come on,
a difference.
Guys, let's go back to Kurt Rambis and McHale. You guys remember that in the finals?
Of course.
Holy mackerels. Years and years ago, I'll tell you a guy you guys remember, Marcus Johnson. He was with us with the Bucks years ago. And we had some really terrific guards, Quinn Buckner and Sidney Moncrief. Junior Bridgman, Brian Winters, and those some of those guys were really strong. And against the quick point guard, to your point, Tony, they put their hand right on the guy's hip, and they could direct them as to where they wanted to go. And you were allowed to do that. Well, now the point guard position has become like the quarterbacks in the NFL.
Right.
That's the key position, and you can't touch them. It's just the way it is, and it's opened up the game. And, frankly, I love the game where it's at right now.
Yeah. Well, the ratings agree with you. I think the game last night was
That's
the highest
true.
Western Conference final game one ever. Hey, Gary, thanks a lot. I think we could talk hoops with you all night. I hope we can catch up with you later on, maybe in the finals or just down the road somewhere. It was a blast. Enjoyed it.
Well, enjoyed it, guys. And my dream is the Celtics come back and win, and we're going to have the Warriors and the Celtics in the finals. And I get to go back home. That'd be fun.
Yeah, for a Massachusetts guy who works for the Warriors, that'd be perfect.
That'd be perfect.
That'd be pretty neat.
Thanks,
Gary.
You
guys have a great night down there.
You too. We will. Right. Thank you so much. Yeah, that was a fun way to end the show. Gary St. You guys, I just wish you had a picture of Tony.
I mean,
said, well, what rules are we playing with? Tony did a cartwheel, practically. He was so excited.
Tony likes to do these cheering moves whenever something goes his way.
When something goes his way, and it goes his way a lot. So that was a good way to end the show. Good stuff from
great
Gary St.
Gary
Jean.
Was a great guest right
good
there.
Work, Scraby.
Thank
nice
you.
Job today.
Real quick, I have an announcement for tomorrow. We have Chris Stapleton tickets, and we are going to be bringing back Gwen versus Chris.
Oh,
trivia challenge.
Are we serving Chris up on a platter again like we did last time?
I haven't slept since losing the last battle.
Yeah.
So I've been up on the phone every night with Draymond Green, plotting my way to come back and win the next time.
Wasn't much of a battle.
Get out of here. It was close. It was pretty close.
I let him get the last one.
All right, we'll have some fun. I'll let you think. I had to give you one. Otherwise, you might have retired from the game. I didn't want you to, you know.
We'll see tomorrow.
All right, Gwen versus Chris, that'll be on the show tomorrow. We're at 3 o'clock to 7 tomorrow, so we got a whole big old day. So join us early and stay with us late tomorrow. Again, thanks to Matt Scraby. Thanks to Brett Finn. Thanks to Jim Russell, Rich Herrera. Sorry I thank all these people, but it really is impossible without
team
all
effort.
Of them.
Team effort.
Kevin Callahan and I always, Bob Bollinger, for giving us the chance to work together. And from what I understand, TG Jr., the ratings are coming out, and you know, you fans out there are doing all right by us. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for checking out the Gwen and Chris show. Like I always say, I hope you guys are having as much fun listening to it as we are doing the show for you.
We really try to have a show that it's just me and Chris in here. And if you guys happen to turn on the channel and enjoy it, Please keep coming back because we enjoy doing it.
And go tell 10 people also. Yeah, don't forget to do
tell
that.
Tell a few people to turn in. Tune in, too.
We'll see you tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Chris Sello.
Tony Gwynn Jr.
Gwynn and Chris.
San Diego's new home for Padres baseball, 97.3 The Fan.